we are doing it live.
Calm down, Bill.
We are doing it live. We're doing
Calm down, Bill.
Bad Quaker Mobile. It's in the heart of enemy-occupied territory in the rural Mountain East. That's right, we are live from Porkfest. And on the other end of the line, we have the laughing kitty, Diana, who is in a secret, undisclosed location somewhere in the world for security purposes. Where are you?
In the Great White North.
You're up in Kanuckistan hiding out from drone missiles, right?
Much. Yep. Yep.
Okay, so
deep underground.
Okay, so you're going to be coming down here in just a couple days, right?
Yes, I'll be there Wednesday.
Okay, are you going to try? Don't tell when you're coming in. Security, security.
Oh, I forget. I get a false sense of security with all the government stuff around.
Right. Oh, of course. And this is Lusander Fien. I'm sitting in for Mr. Michael Dean, who is currently at the blimp port. Getting Airworm 1 all fueled up with helium and whatever runs to the lawnmower motor that gets him here, and he will be on his way soon. So, what are you doing up in Montreal? This is kind of a big trip for you. Oops, I said where you are.
Oh, yeah. Well, they'll find me anyway. It doesn't matter. I'm sure I'm on a list somewhere. I'm just visiting, actually. I'm just up here visiting. Plan on traveling from here to another location in Quebec. And then I'll be going to Quebec City. And then I'll be coming down to Porkfest. Just, you know, I've never been here before. It's a beautiful city. Walked around last night in old Montreal. And I saw some beautiful old buildings, and it's just really, really cool. It seems to be very multicultural as well.
Okay, how's the architecture there? Is it brutalist or humanitarian?
It's very humanitarian here. Yeah, it's very organic for the most part. I mean, except for the newer buildings. I mean, they're kind of more square looking.
Okay, that's one of the things I really liked about Germany was they had a lot of really old architecture, because you had like new buildings that were put up in the 1600s, but you also had new stuff that was put up in like the 1800s and a little bit later on, but they had mimicked and copied some of the previous architecture. Like there's a building in Munich, I can't remember if it was the Rathaus, which is spelled Rat House, which means that's where the government office is. But it looked like probably something out of the 1500s, 1600s, or maybe even earlier, and that was how they had built it, you know, later on.
Wow, yeah, that's cool.
And even stuff that was damaged during the war was rebuilt to look the way that it was originally. And then, of course, you got the really modern stuff, which is just brutal to look at and everything else, so...
Yeah, things jutting out at you, and you know, it's like, be scared, be afraid.
Yes. So is this going to be your first Porkfest too?
Yes, it is. And it's yours?
Yes, it's mine.
Yeah, I saw the great pictures of your kitchen set up there.
Yes, it is the assault kitchen. It has a shoulder thing that pops up. It has a barrel shroud on it. And it has a cyclic rate of 30 pounds of bacon per minute.
Right on.
Look out, everybody. So, not a whole lot is getting going yet just now at Porkfest, because people are just now starting to come in. There were a few people came in last night. A couple people are coming in this morning, and they're starting to get the registration going. So, there's not a whole lot to talk about in that regard. But what we're going to talk about today is most of the radio stations that we're on, the 24 terrestrial stations, are Tea Party conservative types. And this show is going to be more for the Tea Partiers than for the regular Fiend fans. And what we're going to do is we're going to address some of the fallacies that go along with what people believe in government. And as far as government goes, there's this belief that it is, one, legitimate, because we consented. Now, not that any consent was actually given. That's actually good. That government is good. And yes, there are Tea Partiers that, for as much as they hate the government, they believe that it is good. And what we're going to really talk about today are the police. And a lot of the Tea Partiers, I'm sorry, you hate the government, but you love their enforcement wing, the police and military. And the third part about it is that it is necessary. We would all die without it. And this comes down to a conversation that I had recently with a very active member in the Tea Party. And she kept giving me the thing about, this is a republic, we have a constitution, and all this other stuff. And the argument from a lot of these conservative constitutionalists, whatever, is that if only we get back to the Constitution.
Right.
And what I tend to ask them is, well, when was the Constitution followed? Now, when was this great time that you're yearning for?
Right.
And I've actually had people tell me that when Washington sent troops to put down the Whiskey Rebellion, the 25% beverage tax that he signed off on after fighting a war partially over a 3% beverage tax, that that was constitutional. If that's if sending soldiers to take money from people is constitutional and that's something you agree with, I'm sorry. I can't get on board with that.
Right.
That's nothing short of armed robbery. And it doesn't change from being armed robbery if you rename it an enumerated power.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, but what really came down, what it really came down to was this idea that if there was not government, people would be going out and killing each other. Mm. People would be going out and robbing and raping and pillaging and plundering and just doing all these horrible things.
Right.
And people actually believe this stuff. I mean, there's there's actually a heartfelt belief that the person who was perfectly sane and normal yesterday would wake up this morning a complete foaming at the mouth, stark raving lunatic. Really? How does this happen?
Yeah, and that is definitely a fallacy. You know, but most of what I have witnessed in terms of human behavior. Even during times of strife, people tend to cooperate and help each other. You know, people don't you know, I mean, of course, you know, you've got a few bad apples, you know, but for the most part, people tend to be cooperative and they tend to collaborate and they get problems solved without any government intervention whatsoever. I mean, you know, I was saying before the show that we it's like we can't have anything nice because the government will just ruin it.
Exactly.
You know, it's the government. The government instills, the state instills fear in us. They divide us. You know, that's basically their MO is to divide and conquer. You know, if they make us fear each other, which you know they definitely are very good at doing, then you know, of course, we're not going to cooperate. But as a general rule, even groups of people that tend to not necessarily favor each other, when it comes down to it, most people are going to help each other.
Yeah, yeah, they will help each other. I remember when I was a kid, and this was probably about 1980-ish, somewhere around there, give or take a year or two, a really bad storm came through my hometown, and It took out electricity for like 3 days, maybe a little bit longer. Trees came down, and it started probably about 8 a.m, something like that. And then it was done like within an hour. I mean, the sky turned green. It was the worst storm I've ever seen in my life. And you know, after the sun came back out, which was just a little while later. You know, the men of the neighborhood were going around and helping the elderly ladies. There was a lady that lived kitty corner from me, Mrs. Moore. The men were over there and taking the tree off of her awning and her roof and chopping it up with chainsaws. And us youngsters were running the stuff that we were able to carry, and the teenagers were doing their thing. And at the end, she brought out some Kool-Aid and offered some money, and they're like, no, we got this. And then on to the next house.
Yeah. Yeah. That's most of what I have witnessed, is that, you know, in situations like that, people come out and they help each other out.
Yeah. And, and that's really, I believe that's more human nature than the going around beating people up and looting and pillaging and all that other stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, I will say that it has become a little bit more human nature since the advent of the ballot box.
Yeah.
But people aren't going to do it themselves. They'll have some government thug do it.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
But anyway, what else did we want to talk about? Ah, the Nirvana fallacy. Can you give us a little briefing on the Nirvana fallacy?
Yeah, the Nirvana fallacy, according to Wikipedia, is the informal fallacy of comparing actual things with unrealistic idealized alternatives. It can also refer to the tendency to assume that there is a perfect solution to a particular problem. A closely related concept is the perfect solution fallacy. It creates a false dichotomy that presents that one option is obviously advantageous, while at the same time being completely implausible. A person using the Nirvana fallacy can attack any opposing idea because it is imperfect. And an example would be, the Wikipedia actually uses a couple of examples of, you know, using drunk driving ad campaigns or anti-drunk driving ad campaigns that people say that this is not going to work, that there are people going to drink and drive no matter what. And the rebuttal would be the complete eradication of drunk driving is not the expected outcome. The goal is reduction. One of the things that when you first introduced me to this idea, the first thing that popped in my head was that the perfect is the enemy of the good, and is actually that it actually references that saying, which is originally from Voltaire.
Yeah. And to be clear to the folks out there, the Tea Partiers that are listening to us, yeah, we are anarchists, anarcho-capitalists, voluntarists, abolitionists, whatever you want to call us. We advocate a stateless society. We advocate a society free of government oppression, theft, and murder. And what a lot of people, where the Nirvana fallacy comes in, is a lot of people have this idea that without this omnipotent, omniscient, great entity of government keeping everybody in line, keeping them in control, that everybody would freak out and humanity would disappear. And we'll be back with more of the explanations. Stick with us for more Freedom Fiends.
Worms!
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space. Have you ever wanted to move to the land of LibPair? Libertarian paradise, where there's fun for everyone that doesn't initiate force on others, fun for the kids, parties for the adults, buy and sell in silver or Bitcoin, scenic hikes and gun shoots, speeches to educate us all. The Porcupine Freedom Festival is LibPair in the White Mountains of New Hampshire for a week this summer, June 22nd to 29th. Get your tickets now before there's no more room. Porkfest, the event of a lifetime. Porkfest.com. That's PORCFEST.com.
The central scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
So when you see a cop in the rearview mirror, do you feel safe?
No, I don't.
Do you feel protected?
No, I feel scared.
Or do you feel like a target?
I feel like a target. I feel like that I'm doing something wrong.
But if you're not doing anything wrong, what should you worry about? What do you have to be worried about?
I don't know. It's just their very presence instills a sense of fear.
And why is that?
Because they're mean.
They're road pirates.
They're road pirates. Yeah, they're scary. They walk around thinking they have special privileges because they wear shiny badges.
Yes, and funny costumes.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about that a little bit more in the show. And we're going to talk about my recent experience with the road pirates and the magistrate.
But oh, no.
We interrupt this Freedom Fiends episode to bring you a special update, a special report live from Pork Fest, where I have finally met a good friend of mine from Face Beef for the very first time in my life. And I'd like to welcome Joanne from Connecticut to the show. How are you doing, Joanne?
I'm doing great. It was great to meet you, too.
Yeah, we got a chance to say hello during the break, and that was it. And this is our first time meeting. And so how long did it take you to get up here from Connecticut?
About 4 hours.
Okay. And are you going to be staying the night in town here? Or?
No, I just came up for the day.
Okay.
Just to see you.
Oh, my God. I feel so special. The listeners might be able to see how much I'm blushing. That's how much I'm blushing right now. But are you going to be able to hang out and check out some of the activities and all the other things going on? And
oh, yeah, you know, I'll be here today.
Okay. And you were cordially invited over to the Assault Kitchen for dinner tonight?
Oh, awesome.
Yep. Did you get over to the campsite to check it out?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
That's where I headed first, and then they said, oh, no, he's clear up doing his radio show. So
okay. Well, I'm glad you found us. So what all do you know about Pork Fest? Because this is your first time coming up here, right?
Yeah, it is. I know that I believe it's sponsored by the Free State Project.
Yes.
And I find what they do very interesting, and I would like to be part of that, too, if I ever get a chance.
Excellent. Excellent. And you've had an interesting transformation over your life, if I recall. You were not so long ago a Big L libertarian.
Yeah. I'm sort of 5% that and about 95% anarchist now. And some of that is your fault.
You're just following it to its logical conclusion, Joanne. That's
I
all.
I know. That you are absolutely right.
I will gladly take credit for this. Now, something else for the people out there that are scratching their heads saying, what in the world is going on with these people? How could they be the A word? How could they be abolitionists and opposed to state slavery? You're not exactly an edgy teenager either, right, Joanne?
No, I'm 62 years old.
Just turned 62 recently.
I did.
Another happy birthday.
Thank you.
And have seen the light.
Absolutely.
What was it that really pushed you towards the edge?
Oh, it started with, I think it started with the Patriot Act. And just kept going from there. Going into Iraq and all the other subsequent wars. And, of course, the NSA is absolutely the worst thing against our liberties, I think, that I've ever seen, our privacy.
Okay. And you've been pretty involved in the Libertarian Party for quite a few years, correct?
Just a few years. Actually, I got there, actually joined the party when I was working for Gary Johnson's campaign. And so I've been with them ever since. And yes, I am still part of the Libertarian Party. I'm going to the National Convention next week. But there's just a part of me that's just about ready to give up on the whole thing.
Yeah, most of the people that I know that are in the LP are straight up ANCAPs.
It's true.
Yeah. And they keep inviting ANCAP speakers to go to their conventions and monthly meetings and stuff like that. And pretty soon they're just going to vote to disband themselves, I think.
Yeah, that could be a possibility.
Yeah. Now, how about the war on drugs?
Oh, well, there's nothing worse than that. Always has been.
Have you always held that belief, or is that something that you evolved to over time?
No, I've always had that belief. My first presidential... The first president I voted for, or wanted to be president, was George McGovern, and it was...
All right, we'll be back with more Freedom Fiends in a little bit. By the way, if government is good or necessary, why would you ever limit or restrain it?
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
What sets Survival Punk apart from all those other survivalist sites? A rational, creative approach to self-reliance. Applying a punk DIY ethic to survivalism without any of the fear-mongering or tinfoil hattery that pervades the survivalist movement. Survival Punk covers a huge range of topics, along with a healthy bit of myth-busting. Survival Punk provides a ton of dirt-cheap creative solutions to common prepping problems, with an accent on the paleo lifestyle. Check out survivalpunk.com. That's survivalpunk.com.
There is a process. You fill out the paperwork, you stand in line, and you wait your turn. Obamacare is the law. Oh, you thought I was talking about immigration, didn't you? Both laws, because a couple of central planners said so.
Yeah.
That is the law. We're going to talk to Joanne for a couple more minutes and finish your thoughts on the war on drugs. And Joanne, you said that you were opposed to the war on drugs from the beginning.
Absolutely.
It. And that would be the next few years.
Absolutely.
Okay. And you were talking about when you were going to vote for...
For George McGovern, because he was going to legalize drugs and he was going to end the war in Vietnam. And I had someone over there in the war and I wanted it to end. It was a ridiculous war to begin with. And of course, war on drugs has never worked, and it never will. It's just a lot of money thrown at wasteless, you know, wasting bureaucrats, and the only people that are making any money out of it is the jail system and
And the drug cartels.
Drug cartels and all that, you know.
Yeah, the war on drugs is actually no cartel or police agency left behind.
Yeah.
There's exactly. A lot of whining and complaining about the cartels having enough money to buy submarines, even disposable submarines, to transport their product. How are they able to get the type of loot to purchase submarines? It's because of such a high markup from an illicit market.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the no police agency left behind is when you see the Bearcats and the MRAPs and all these other armored vehicles that will be patrolling your streets and stopping little girls from having lemonade stands and attacking your front yard raspberry bushes. That is the result of the war on drugs. The war on drugs has escalated the militarization of the police state. And for those of you that believe in proper roles of government, You can't use the military on U.S. soil, but I don't think there's any hard and fast rule that says you can't militarize the police department.
Yeah. Yeah, that's making me think of the fact that Kane, I think, is getting a Bearcat. They are definitely getting a Bearcat.
Is it Kane or was it Concord?
I thought originally Kane, and now Concord is getting one. You know, and it's like, okay, so, I mean, how does this make any sense at all? You know, that they need that level of militarization, you know, because there are people that are speaking their minds and they don't like what they have to say.
I heard something the other day and it makes perfect sense. The more security that the government sets up against the people, the worse that they are. It's kind of like the Tacitus quote, the more corrupt the state, the more it legislates. The more armed guards, the more security, the more sensors, cameras, and everything else, the more corrupt the state.
Mm-hmm.
The more it arms itself against the people that they are allegedly there to serve. Because that is the bumper sticker. That's what we learned in civics class, right? That the people are the true masters of government and that they are the servants and not the other way around.
Yeah.
But government and the police are the only relationship where the servants bark the orders and mete out the punishment.
It's become a war on the people, not a war on drugs.
Exactly. So what was it really I mean, for the war on drugs, because you're an accountant.
Yes.
So you're not, and for the people who can't see you, clean cut lady, conservative looking. you're not a dirty hippie working in a head shop.
No, I'm a tax accountant.
Okay, so you see the real war on humanity through the tax farm.
Oh, absolutely. And I work for an oil and gas company, and I know everybody likes to berate them and say, oh, they don't pay any taxes and all this stuff. Oh, trust me, I do their tax returns, and my God, they pay a buttload of taxes. So
yeah.
Anyway, just an aside.
Yeah. So going back to the war on drugs, what was your opposition? And you're not smoking a joint right now. You don't have a bong in your back pocket, right?
No, absolutely not. Well, when I was, when I was in college, and yeah, I did some of that, and I couldn't see what the harm was in it. You know, you smoke pot, you giggle, and you eat pizza. You know, what kind of harm could that be? And I just couldn't see why people should be put in jail for having a joint, or, you know, being in your living room, you know, smoking a joint after work or whatever, after school. It just doesn't make sense. It's no different than somebody going home and having a glass of wine.
Right. And Diana, with the amount of giggling that you do, is there something you would like to disclose to us?
No. No comment. No, I'm just kidding. I just laugh. I'm just a happy person. So, you know, I like to laugh.
Yeah.
I'm high on life, put it that way.
Me too. Last time I smoked weed was in the Reagan years. There may have been one time when Clinton was president, but I didn't inhale.
Oh.
But anyway, so yeah, the war on drugs, and here's something to consider. If you remember the last selection cycle in 2012, you had Santorum and Gingrich, who had both admitted to having smoked marijuana in the past. Mm-hmm. Neither one of them has volunteered to pay their debt to society. They haven't they haven't reported to a county jail or a prison system and, you know, handed over their suit and exchanged it for stripes or orange or whatever. Why is that? Why aren't they volunteering to pay their debt to society?
As I recall, Obama hasn't either, and everyone knows that he has smoked pot and definitely inhaled.
Oh yeah, and he used to bogart that stuff too. So,
and he was supposed to end the war on drugs as well. You know, he was supposed to get us out of, just like McGovern promised, you know, Obama promised to, you know, do something about the war on drugs. He promised to get us out of, you know, the wars overseas. And all he's done basically is double down on everything.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I can't tell if it's Obama's second term or George W. Bush's fourth term or George Washington's 92nd.
Right.
Because there's really been a lot of consistency in government policy since the beginning. Now, granted, you might have like the Coolidge years where some things were scaled back, but envision, if you will, if you're driving, don't envision this right now, but picture one of those long balloons that they use for balloon animals, and it's inflated, and shrinking government is you squeeze one end of the balloon, and where does the air go?
The other end.
Yeah, it expands somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So for all the people that talk about Calvin Coolidge being the do-nothing president, no, not really true, because he created a new government agency, and he's the one that nationalized the roads.
Did not know that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're road scholars around here, so we're going to talk about private roads versus government roads.
Road scholars.
A little bit later on.
<Ba-dum-tsh>.
Yeah. Hey, you don't have to be a Rhodes Scholar to figure this stuff out.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I grew up, I'm 43. Okay, I look like I'm 29, but I'm 43. Well, actually, I tell people I'm 29. As a matter of fact, I have another anniversary of that birthday coming up in September. But anyway, I grew up with the propaganda of, if you smoke weed, you're going to, you know, grow a third eye or something like that. And my mother, she wasn't a really good communicator. So she tried to scare me into not doing those sorts of things. And she said, if you smoke pot just once, you'll never be able to learn anything else again. Mm-hmm. Nothing.
Ridiculous.
And I found out that she was, you know, lying about it. Because there were people that I knew going to school that were smoking pot and they were still learning stuff. Their brain didn't come to a complete halt. And really, filling your kids with all that bullshit humor, trying to scare them straight, it doesn't work. And once you've been caught in a couple lies, you know, the credibility goes out the window. So, you know, there's a lot of parents out there that don't do that. They don't tell those stories to try and trick their kids. You know, they're honest with them, and their kids wind up making smarter decisions. And the politicians who consider themselves to be the parents, the mommy or the daddy, whatever, you know, they tell all these lies and try to instill fear. And what they wind up doing is, you know, a great majority of the population becomes dissidents. You know, they realize that the curtain has been pulled away and there's nothing there but a scared little man with no powers. And then
that's right.
And then they become like Joanne, a newly converted abolitionist.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the emperor has no clothes.
Absolutely. Getting more naked every day.
What were some of the things that changed you on it? I guess the big thing to ask is, do you have some great hurdle like the roads or the court system that you're not at 100% yet?
Yeah, I think there's probably just a little piece of me that says, you know, maybe we could, if you could shrink government, if you could get more libertarian people in government, they could shrink it down to a real small size that, you know, they could just leave you alone, you know, tweak whatever small things they need to tweak, but just basically, you know, give us back all of our money, stay out of our bedrooms, say, you know, just leave us alone. But they just don't seem to be able to do that. And, you know, even the, like the Rand Pauls that are running, you know, saying that they're libertarian, which of course they really aren't. You know, I don't think even the Republicans don't embrace them. They think that they're extremists, which is completely ridiculous, because they're not really small government legislators either.
No.
But I don't know. There's still just a little piece of me that says, if we could just, but you have to get the majority of the people to agree to this. And I just don't think there's enough people out there to do that.
We'll be back with more Freedom Fiends right after this.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges start a conversation with your neighbor or your doctor or your family or your school. Now there's teachers and lawyers and business executives, and they all wear shiny badges and they all reject the state. Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges show the world that you reject coercion and aggression and oppression by the state. Shinybadges.com.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to announce the second annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It's at the Circle Pine Center just outside Kalamazoo, Friday, August 22nd through Monday, August 25th. There will be family and grown-up friendly activities, great conversation, presentations, and bacon. Lots of bacon. It doesn't matter if you're an OG libertarian, a newbie, or just anarcho-curious. Come on out and enjoy some voluntarism. For more information, go to miplc.org.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends Radio Show, where we are broadcasting live and worldwide from the Free State Project. Where am I? I'm so excited to be here. I don't even know where I am. We're in New Hampshire, Lancaster, New Hampshire, at Pork Fest, and I'm geeked. Because I'm at Pork Fest, and I'm meeting friends from the internet that I never met before, and I'm hanging out with the Bad Quaker, who's the board op, and I got an assault kitchen, and my life is great, and I think everybody's having a blast too.
Hey, I'm in a hotel room.
Wow. Before we went to break, Joanne was talking about, if only we could get the right people in charge. If only we could vote harder.
Well, she didn't quite sound like that.
No, she didn't. There's a very interesting quote from J.R.R. Tolkien from the Lord of the Rings fame, and it goes like this. My personal opinions lean more and more toward anarchy. Mm-hmm. The most improper role of man, even saints, is the bossing of other men. Not one in a million is fit for the task, least of all those that seek to do it.
Yeah, I posted that on my Facebook page once, and I had someone comment basically saying that, well, if we had the right people in charge, they wouldn't abuse their power.
But what type of person actually wants to be in charge and wants to have that power and not use it?
Exactly.
Because I don't think Santorum or Bloomberg or any of their usual suspects are examples of it. Yeah. And Ben's going to pop in for a second and tell us a little bit about the nature of the state and what that filthy beast really is. Take it, Ben.
Oh, that's something I could talk about for hours continually and put everyone to sleep with. But yeah, essentially, you know, what you have is there are two types of people who tend to go into government. There are, well, you could divide it up in many ways, but I'm thinking of two different types of people. One type of person just really wants to dominate other people, and politics is the best way to do that. Economically speaking, it's easiest to get into, and you have the biggest bang for your buck. If what you want to do is control other people, then politics is a great way to do it. And the other type of people that are motivated to go into politics are people who genuinely want to make things better for others. And unfortunately, thinking that you can use government to make things better for others is a little bit on the naive side. So you have these two types of people going into government. One type is actually a predatory type, and the other is somewhat naive. And so you have these people feeding off of each other, and the predatory type of politician will tend to either convert the other one or dominate the other one. And so so this is a process of elimination that means that pretty much everybody, and it's not 100%, but pretty much everybody who has a chance of making a difference in politics is either going to be one of these predatory people, or they're going to be a little on the weaker and more naive side and be manipulated by these predatory people. So this process gets worse and worse and worse. And there is this thing called the great man theory. Herbert Spencer, the great man theory was getting very popular in the 1800s, especially with the introduction of people starting to believe in evolution and this kind of thing. And so things like the explosion of Napoleon Bonaparte's presence on the European stage, and magnificent things that he was doing, and great personalities like Abraham Lincoln and others, it all seemed to support this great man idea that yes, there are those among us who are destined to lead, and there are great people who are somehow able to resist the temptation of power and do good things with power. But Herbert Spencer in the 1800s was an English thinker, and he took the great man theory piece by piece, analyzed it, and just totally destroyed it. And anyone seeking information on that, I would strongly recommend to read his writings. And the book I'm thinking of jumps out of my head. But Lou, I'll give it back to you, and we'll get out of here.
Second hour of Freedom Fiends coming up right after this. Freedom Fiends, where the right people are in charge. Worms. We'll be right back.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. You know, without the Star Trek communicator, we wouldn't have cell phones or computers that fit in your pocket. Because envisioning the future is the first step to real groundbreaking changes in our lifetime. That's why I love Scott Beezer's webcomic, Quantum Vibe. Quantum Vibe has allowed me to more clearly envision LibPair, or Libertarian Paradise, and help me work toward it. Who'll build the roads? You and me. Who'll draw up the blueprints? Scott Beezer in Quantum Vibe at BigHeadPress.com. That's BigHeadPress.com.
Looking for a new home with good neighbors, no income tax, an active shooting culture with excellent Second Amendment protections, a great business climate, and less government? Then Wyoming might just be the place for you. And freedom-minded folks are already there. Founded by author Kenneth Royce, FreeStateWyoming.org encourages free trade, political liberty, and voluntary cooperation. Come bask in the laissez-faire Western culture of the cowboy state. For details, visit FreeStateWyoming.org.
Fast. And we got an update from Mr. Michael W. Dean. It turns out that he's been taken into custody by TSA. They've taken him into a private office, and they want to talk to him about MWDs and windowless bunkers. So, yeah, they're probably going to be inspecting him quite a bit. And with him being kind of free spirit, you know, he might consider this a random encounter, or he might be screaming, "Bad touch, bad touch." But anyway, we wish him well. And before we went to break, Ben was talking about the great man fallacy, and he was talking about the type of people that go into government. And one of my favorite quotes from C.S. Lewis, and this goes to the ones that want to help us.
Yeah.
And I think Bloomberg and a lot of them are that type. I don't think that they have evil in their hearts. I think they have so much good in their hearts that they can't help but get a little bit of it on you. Of all tyrannies, a tyranny exercised for the good of its victims may be the most oppressive. It may be better to live under robber barons than under omnipotent moral busybodies. The robber baron's cruelty may sometimes sleep, his cupidity may at some time be satiated, but those who torment us for our own good will torment us without end, for they do so with the approval of their own consciences.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because before we went to break, and what Ben was talking about with the great man fallacy, it made me think of, you know, of all the people who've been in power, you know, in any nation in this world, they, for the most part, they probably felt like they were doing the right thing, and they had, you know, the approval of their own consciences and what they were doing. You know, Hitler comes to mind.
Or the approval of their own libido dominandi, which is Latin for the lust to dominate others.
Yeah.
And not the type that you have to pay extra for. So, Ben, you had a little bit more to talk about on the great man fallacy.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm not the one that brought up Hitler, but he's a perfect example of that. I mean, he, you know, there was some, I read Mein Kampf when I was about 14 or so, because I was curious as to what would cause a person to be that deeply evil and do such horrible things. But I think the picture I took from that was not so much, I mean, there was some bitterness there, and there was some racism, and there was a lot of negative things that you can point to. But even a man that evil, it was his deepest desire to make the world a better place, to, you know, and so it doesn't really matter if you're, and I'm sure that a lot of politicians, that's their deepest desire, is to make things better. But the better world for that person may not mm-hmm. necessarily be a better world for me. You know, I'm the best determinant of what's a better world for me. So when I take authority and I give it to somebody and I allow them the opportunity to decide what's best for me and what's best for everybody else, whether we want it or not, you know, that's essentially what government is. It's the individual abdicating their own God-given authority or natural authority to somebody else to decide all these things. And it's, and it kind of is based on this, on the great man fallacy, or as it was called in the 1800s, the great man theory, that there are specific human beings among us that are either destined to rule, or they are higher evolved, or for whatever reason, they are much better at ruling over us, and we should just shut up and allow that to happen.
They have magic powers, right?
Essentially, that's what it boils down to. If you believe that a person, for some reason, because their great-great-grandfather had a specific name, or because they have genetics through a specific family of royalty that's gone through years, or if somehow, some other imagined authority is given to them, the vote, the flaw of democracy is the idea that all of us together can decide who this great man is. But if we don't have what it takes to figure out how to rule our own lives, then how is it that 100 or 1,000 or 1,000,000 of us getting together and agreeing on something can come up with a better idea than what the individual had,
Right. And as H.L. Mencken put it, democracy is the collective wisdom of individual ignorance. And when you're talking about democracy versus a republic is a form of democracy. And direct democracy, the people loot their neighbors directly with their own votes, or they all make each other's decisions for each other. In a republic, the violence is outsourced to a group of representatives who make up the oligarchy. So either way, you still can't make your own decisions under this republican form of government or democratic form, because even if you get down to small levels, they still will not tolerate the individual. And I don't care if you're talking about Rand Paul, and even Ron Paul, who is my favorite government thug. But with him supporting the Constitution and government action in any way, shape, or form, he is limiting your choices.
Yeah, because that goes back to the great man theory. Well, if we could just get Ron Paul elected, Ron Paul would fix everything. And Ron Paul, and we're assuming that there's one human being that can do what no other human being has ever been able to do, and that is resist temptation. Well, if you're a Christian and you believe in Jesus and you believe the story of the Bible, then you have an example of one human being who could resist temptation. But so far as what's documented, we only have that one story. And if you think about what it was that Jesus was resisting, what it was that when he was tempted, what was he tempted with? Well, we're told in the story that's told in the Bible, he was tempted with the kingdoms of the earth. He was literally tempted with the power of government. And that's what he rejected.
And how could the devil offer what he did not possess?
Ah, because it was the realm of the devil. Yeah. You see, if Satan, talking to Jesus, if Satan did not have the actual power and authority to give Jesus that governmental position that he was offering him, then it wouldn't have been a temptation. Jesus was smart enough to know whether or not Satan actually had that power. And Satan began the conversation by showing him all the kingdoms of the earth. And he said, this is my realm. I have been given authority over this, and I can give it to you if you just come to my side. And if the argument was invalid, if the offer was invalid, Jesus would not have been tempted by it. But the very fact that he was tempted means that Jesus believed that the realm of government is the realm of Satan, and Jesus rejected that path to glory.
Yeah, if that's not convincing to those of you listening, I don't know what would be. that the realm of government is Satan's realm. Regardless of whether you believe in Satan or not, it's a realm of evil.
Yeah, and I can be the total libertarian smart aleck, like we tend to be, and say, well, then if you love government, you must hate Jesus.
That's a maniacal laugh.
Yeah, I also do a Woody Woodpecker impersonation, but that is in the middle of the night when everybody's getting ready to go to sleep and things quiet down.
Plus that sound is probably patented or something.
Yeah, I have a copyright on it, or patent or trademark or something like that. But something else that goes along with the myth of the great man or the great man fallacy is the myth of the boogeyman. Just as you have this great leader, this guy with magic powers that can come in and clean everything up, and all he has to do is wave his hands and snap his fingers and bark a couple of commands. By the same token, you have the boogeyman, who the great man is to protect you from. And it doesn't matter if it's a Saddam Hussein or a Osama bin Laden, a Vladimir Putin, or you know, the person is running against your candidate. You know, you have the boogeyman. And they're always made up to be the same amount of evil that the great man is made up of greatness. So let's take an example with Son of Sam. You know, he's going in. You know, he's killing all these people, and everybody's just scared Schumerless of this. Everybody's freaking out in New York City. You know, they made movies about it. They wrote books about it. And when it all is said and done, you know, you see David Berkowitz, and he's just a below-average-looking guy. He has no magic powers. He has no, you know, horns coming out of his head, no tail, no pitchfork in his hand, nothing. He's just a man. And just as the great man is just a
man. Just a man.
Just as Ron Paul or Rand Paul are just men, or Mitt Romney, there's no magic powers. Government is not omnipotent or omniscient. It's just people. And usually they're quite unremarkable.
Yeah.
And when
except to the degree of their sociopathy.
Yeah. And once you can get past this, that government is just human beings, a tiny group of human beings with the so-called, they claim the authority to do things that they put other people in jail for. That's government. You know, government is the gun. It's the gun in the room. It's the full aggression principle. Whereas a libertarian, somebody who believes in individual liberty, is an adherent to the zero aggression principle. So Michael just calls it the aggression principle, but I call it the full aggression principle because you need that little qualifier on there. And, you know, you're choosing aggression or non-aggression, violence or non-violence. I mean, it's... How does somebody say, oh, no, we have to have violence because society would not function without people going around and bullying others, you know?
Without a gun pointed at them, they won't behave.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like when George Washington said, if you don't like the whiskey tax, move to Somalia.
He didn't say that.
Famous quotes by George Washington.
Well, Thomas Jefferson, among his famous quotes, were a free and open internet is essential to American liberty.
No. People might actually believe that now. Come on.
Well, he was a visionary, right?
Right.
Now, what Jefferson said, which people tend to ignore, is the nature of government to grow and for liberty to disappear. So it is the nature of government to increase in size until nothing else remains.
Yeah.
That being said, how do you limit it? How do you restrain it? If it's good, why would you limit it or restrain it? And how do you keep it limited? Because the great men, aka the founding lawyers, you know, they were supposed to create this beautiful thing, and they couldn't even keep it like that. More Freedom Fiends coming up right after this trip to the market. Wow.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. I steal your labor by force through taxation.
My job is to spy on you and keep you from hearing things like the Freedom Fiends. I especially do not want you to torrent
Freedom Fiends episodes to keep them drone-proof. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives.
Yeah. fun to hang around with, fun to listen to, tell two friends. And I got to give a shout out to my buddy Tracy, who is down in Kentucky listening to us on his iPhone. So he's getting a little fiend action on his chrome robot turd.
Hi, Tracy.
And I also have to give a very special shout out to my friend Danny, who couldn't be here, but she helped out me and Ben with the sound check last night, and she sent her coffee press in her place. So her coffee press has made it to Porkfest, and we thank you very much, Danny, for that, Danny.
Yeah, thanks, Danny.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and it's got a great little sticker on it.
What does the sticker say?
Oh, it's an A.
That's an A. Cool. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, for anarchy, anarcho-capitalism, abolitionism.
Abolitionism.
Yeah, whatever. But anyway, before we went to break, we were talking about, I just got an update in.
Beep, 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 beep. This just in.
Michael has been released from TSA custody, and he's not moving around very well. And and he is boarded Airworm 1, and he is on his way to Porkfest. So we hope to be seeing him sometime soon. So happy travels, Michael. See you soon. But anyway, yeah, before we went to break, we were yammering about stuff and talking and you know, just libertying and all that other stuff. And so I want to talk about my situation with the Popo, with the rogue pirates.
No.
Yeah.
Not the Popo.
Yeah. I take an alternate route right now because the interstate highway system or interstate pothole system that I take to go to and from work is being ground up into gravel right now. And it needed it. I know it looked like it got bombed out by cluster bombs in an airstrike. But anyway, I made a left turn, and there were signs there, apparently, I'm not going to admit to seeing them, that said no left turn. And there's no traffic around. There's absolutely no problem with turning left. I didn't create a traffic jam. And, of course, nobody got hurt. There was no victim. But anyway, the county road pirate was down at the bottom of the hill waiting for people. As a matter of fact, there were a lot of people getting jammed up. They were pulling people over in an assembly line. And, of course, the young lady who was the sheriff's deputy or the young road pirate, you know, she's telling me about, you know, safety and all this other stuff. And, well, it can't really be about safety because nothing happened. Nobody got harmed. And if you go back to, I believe it was called corpus delicti, which means that in order for something to be a crime, one of the elements is a victim. And when you look at these little nanny laws of no turning on red, especially when there's no traffic around and it's late at night and everything else, or driving 35 in a 30, because we all know that once you go above 30, Armageddon ensues, and the human population is just millimeters away from extinction because you went over that arbitrary number. Now, here's the question. If the money that it was charged in the ticket went to the charity of the, I'm making air quotes here, offender's choice instead of the city or the police department or the court, how many tickets do you think would be written?
Who was it that compared tickets to indulgences in the Dark Ages? Who said that recently?
Wow.
Oh, I talked about that. Back in the early days, and this is what caused Martin Luther to separate from the Catholic Church, was Pope Leo X was selling indulgences to bail family members out of purgatory and limbo and get them out of Hades so that they could go to heaven. So it appears that the church and state have the same justice system. If you have enough money, you can get justice. You can get absolution for your sins.
I think that's a really good comparison because it's like, you know, if you're doing 30 in a 30 zone, then you're not sinning. But if you do 35 or 37, then that's a sin worthy of pulling you over and lecturing you. But nothing bad happened. There was no actual event that was harmful or bad, but you still have to pay for it.
Right.
So that's a lot like many things that are considered sins. Is it really a sin? Nobody's hurt?
Is it a cardinal sin or a mortal sin? We'll discuss that when we come back with more Freedom Fiends right after this.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Freedom Fiends, it's a Pork Fest party. An update from Michael W. Dean. The U.S. Air Force has intercepted Airworm 1, and his flight has been diverted southeast. So he's no longer going from Wyoming to New Hampshire. I wonder where he could be going. I hear he likes the Caribbean. We'll find out. Before we went to break, we were talking about the Highwayman. And Lysander Spooner had a very good description of the Highwayman. The Highwayman takes solely upon himself the responsibility, danger, and crime of his own act. He does not pretend that he has any rightful claim to your money, or that he intends to use it for your own benefit. Furthermore, having taken your money, he leaves you, as you wish him to do. He does not keep protecting you by commanding you to bow down and serve him, by requiring you to do this and forbidding you to do that. And that is from No Treason, the Constitution of No Authority. And that is a perfect example of the traffic cops, because they are the highwaymen and women. And if you don't wear your seatbelt, you have to give them money. If you do not pay the ransom, they will send you a couple love letters telling you to pay the ransom.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll put on a service charge for being late with your ransom.
Mm-hmm. If you don't show up for court, you are under a bench warrant, in which case you can be arrested.
You will be put on the killer capture list. And when I say the killer capture list, because if you do what any normal human being would do, a natural human response to defend yourself against being abducted, they will kill you. Plain and simple.
Yeah.
Now,
that's really depressing, but it's true.
If you have a street mugger and you defend yourself, do you get in trouble for it?
No.
No. You might even get a nice article in the newspaper, unless you use a gun, in which case they're going to call you evil. Mm-hmm. But the mugger is much more considerate, because he doesn't require you to go to a separate building on another date and talk to somebody else about the money that you were supposed to surrender. And I went before the magistrate regarding my, you turned wrong, so you have to give us money. And if you don't think it's about revenue, you're sadly mistaken. What was going on was, well, first of all, the magistrate was late coming in to the courtroom. So the highwayman is efficient. He gets you out of there as quickly as possible. He's shooting for 15 seconds or less. Give it up. You hand it over, he's gone. Thanks, have a nice day. But the magistrate, she comes in probably about 45 minutes late.
Yeah.
And they have this thing in many of the cities here in Michigan, or there in Michigan, because I'm not there right now, to where you get like a, you get a ticket, and it's like an $80 fine, and they'll give you, they'll assess some points on your record, and, you know, whatever. You go your own way. And then, of course, you get a letter in the mail from some safe driving school that's offering an online class for $100 that if you take it, your points will magically disappear from your record. And I have no idea, but that's probably has something to do with a relative in the state legislature. I can't say for certain, but I won't be shocked. But anyway, what you can do is you can plead to something called impeding traffic, which means causing a traffic jam or something like that, or blocking traffic. And it has no points, but it carries a fine of $140. So you can pay a service charge to get your absolution. You can pay this indulgence and go forth and sin no more, my son or daughter. So, and of course, you know, she gave her little opening spiel because you have that mandatory state baiting.
Wait. Did she apologize for being late?
Actually, she did. And she was and she was polite and cheerful. And she, like the highwayman, got the robberies done as quickly as humanly possible. she was clearing cases like it was going out of style. And I couldn't even keep up with the amount of revenue that was generated that day. But she, of course, did her mandatory state baiting of telling us how important these laws are. Okay. Well, that's part of the myth of the state, that it's essential and that we will die without it.
Right.
And what is the reality about traffic laws, Diana?
The reality about traffic laws, certain statistics show that traffic laws don't do anything to protect the people that are using the roads. Read a couple of articles, one where basically it said that seatbelt laws don't really decrease, not only do they not decrease accidents, in fact, accidents have increased, but they don't decrease fatalities either. And it's because seatbelt laws tend to give people when they feel they're required to wear a seatbelt, and they do, seatbelts give people a false sense of security. You know, they think that they can drive more recklessly. They think that they can drive faster. And so it's really done nothing to mitigate, in any kind of, bad traffic, statistics in terms of accidents and fatalities. And the same would go for speed limits as well.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that. For the people that are really interested in the sportsing events and stuff. I'm not a sports guy, so I don't really know a whole lot about it. Although I did play hockey growing up. there's always this talk about the number of concussions in the NFL. And if you compare it to 20 years ago, it's the same number or higher. Mm-hmm. And if you go back to, let's say the 1920s, when they were wearing the leather helmets.
The leather helmets.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so basically they took a baseball mitt and duct taped it to their head and went out and played football.
Right.
But what you have is, as the equipment gets better, people have that false sense of security that you mentioned with the seat belts and also airbags and all these other safety features on vehicles. And right. They're more likely to put their head in a place where they could get a concussion compared to, back in the olden days when they had the leather helmets. They were actually careful. And when I started playing hockey, people weren't wearing face masks, and the pros weren't even wearing helmets yet. That didn't come until a few years later. And you can make certain that somebody, when they went into a corner, they were careful not to smack their head against the glass, the boards, the other person's stick, whatever. Mm-hmm. And the people, the other people were careful not to hit somebody in a way that would hurt them, because one, it's not cool, and that's not really human nature, even though it's hockey. And, it opens up reprisals. So,
yeah. Speaking of helmets, I read something recently about bicycle helmets, that bicycle helmets really do next to nothing to protect you if you are in an accident on the road on a bicycle.
Let those who ride decide.
Right.
And here's something else. In Michigan, the helmet law for motorcyclists was, I'm not going to say it was repealed. I think it expired and they just didn't renew it. Mm-hmm. If you can ride a motorcycle without a helmet, then why would you have to wear a seatbelt?
Exactly.
But, here you have these here you have these fines that can be assessed for seatbelts. And interestingly enough, when the seatbelt law started out in Michigan, the promise was, oh no, seatbelts will never be a reason to pull somebody over and revenue generate. I mean, you know, correct them on their bad behavior. And it was always a secondary charge or offense or mugging, whatever you want to call it. And then eventually it changed over. Oh, this is so important that we have to pull people over for seatbelts.
Right.
Which means that the local governments just didn't have enough money and they needed to generate more revenue.
Yeah, they've had, I mean, I know that in at least in North Carolina anyway, they do have checkpoints where they check to see if you're wearing your seatbelt or not.
Yeah. What did you find out about the speed limit laws?
The speed limit laws, the article was regarding speed limit laws in Montana, and I found this to be pretty fascinating. It's a rather old article. It dates back to 2001, and it's on the website motorist.org. But it compared deaths, traffic fatalities, between times when there were no daytime speed limits to times where they had speed limits. And the fatality rate went up like 111% between those times.
Wait. For our safety, they implement these speed limit laws. And after they implement these speed limit laws for our safety, the number of dead people more than doubles? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Yes. According to this article, that's exactly what it says. And, you know, one of the things that this article says is that when without government, constant government intervention, people do, in fact, act in a reasonable and responsible manner. You know, they do allow, you know, when you know, they allow passing, they just kind of naturally behave themselves, you know, without constant government interference.
I don't believe that for 1 minute, Diana.
Look at the article.
I think if there wasn't government and traffic laws, you would intentionally destroy at least one multi-$1,000 vehicle each week. You would try to kill yourself at least once a day, right?
Yeah, because I'm just not smart enough to figure out what's best for myself. So, you know, I need a good king, to tell me what's good for me.
Yeah. I don't drive very fast because I've got a pickup truck and it's a gas guzzler, and I got a little graph that shows what my mileage is, you know, like at that very second what I'm doing. So, I mean, it just messes with my head, and I always slow down so I could get the best mileage because gasoline is nearly $4 a gallon in Michigan. Mm-hmm. But anyway, aside from the financial incentive and the fact that I don't want to destroy a vehicle that, you know, costs quite a bit of money, and I don't want to kill myself, mm-hmm. you know, I'm sorry, but I need government to keep me in control because in spite of those facts, you know.
You're making me laugh. This is really funny.
In spite of all those incentives not to do stupid stuff, I can't help it. I got to do stupid stuff. It's human nature. I need a king or a ruler to keep me in line. And because humans are fallible, I need another human that is infallible to, you know, keep me from being fallible and whatever.
Yeah. That's right. Picture it, Brother Lou.
But surely we need red lights and traffic lights and all that other stuff. We'll find out when we come back for the final segment, Freedom Fiends Pork Fest.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
Hey, this is Squisscar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the radios. And I guess that says worms now. So there you go.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Freedom Fiends, final segment. Update on Mr. Michael W. Dean. Airworm 1 has arrived in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, and he is being waterboarded with Brondo energy drink. It has electrolytes. Prisoners crave it. Okay, Diana, I refuse to believe that people can go through intersections without traffic lights and signals and all that other stuff. Go.
I don't know about all that. Now, I received a video from a certain other fiend that showed an intersection that looked completely chaotic at first glance. But when you observe it for a short time, even for a short time, you see that there is definitely a method to the madness. And it was an intersection. It was a YouTube video of an intersection in Ethiopia. It didn't say what town in Ethiopia, but it was basically cars crossing like a four-way intersection with pedestrians, and it was sped up. The time was sped up over the course of. This video, and not a single accident, not a single pedestrian injured, nothing. And there were no traffic lights, no stop signs, nothing. And I witnessed the same thing. I visited Africa a couple of years ago, and was in Kenya, and exactly the same thing, you know, and tons of traffic, all different kinds of traffic, cars, trucks, donkeys, carts, people, and motorcycles. And they were just making it. They were making it work.
Yeah, there's some cities in Europe that have taken the traffic lights out of intersections, and they don't have stop signs or yield signs or whatever. And I don't even think that they're the traffic circles, and they're not having any accidents. So right. Once again, that false sense of security that comes from the government coming in and saying, well, we have to regulate you. We have to control what you do. Otherwise, you're going to go smash up your $50,000 car and just go buy a new one and do it again tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then you're going to kill yourself, and then you're going to go and kill yourself again tomorrow, and all that art. It's just utter nonsense. The only word that I can use on radio is it's state baiting. I was trying to justify it. And the things that we've talked about for the Tea Party folks are still listening. You know, Joanne talked about the war on drugs and what she has seen over her 62 years and the impact that it's had. Here's a question for you. If your 15-year-old child was high, or you found a bag of weed in his or her backpack, would you call the cops and say, come take this little monster away and lock it in a cage for X number of years and to have all this other stuff happen to it? Why would you do that with somebody else's child?
Right. Yeah, that brings to mind actually a Louis. I don't know if any of the listeners ever watched Louis. It's kind of a sitcom. I'm not sure I would necessarily call it a comedy that comes on FX. And there was an episode that was called In the Woods. And it was Louis dealing with his own daughter having caught her smoking a joint and how he handled the whole situation. But it was a very good episode. You know, as a parent, you want what's best for your children. But yeah, I mean, why would you ever, you know, do that to your own child, much less other children, other people's children?
And to top it off, and I'm going back to Gingrich and Santorum, they've smoked pot before. So they want people locked in a rape cage for doing something that they did with impunity. Gingrich even advocated execution of having like an ounce or more of weed. Because once you have an ounce, you know, you're a terrorist. 27 grams, no problem. Then you're just a criminal. You know? Ugh,
very arbitrary.
Yeah, yeah, it is arbitrary. And we start off with bashing the cops. Who are the people that enforce this stuff? Who is it that's going to come to your door and kidnap you if you don't pay your fair share? If you don't pay your ransom note on time?
Right.
If you don't sign up for your Obamacare? When you think of domestic tyranny, think of cops. They're the ones that make it all possible.
That's right. Violence, everybody.
Freedom Fiends, out.